This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillahi wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam. Allahumma alimna ma yanfa'una wa anfa'na bima alamtana wa zidna ilman rabbal alameen. Allahumma inna ala dhikrika wa shukrika wa husni ibadatik. Amma ba'd. We had from last time just one hadith left in the series of hadiths where Ibn Qayyim rahimahullah was stressing the gravity of sins. And this one we delayed it because it requires some explanation and it's important that we understand it properly. And this one is presented as a hadith, but as a hadith, meaning as a statement from the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, that is weak. But it's authentic as a statement coming from Salman al-Farisi radiyallahu anhu, who is one of the Sahaba. So let's read it and then let's explain it. And let's derive the benefit that Ibn Qayyim rahimahullah wanted us to get from it. It is said here, and this is what Salman radiyallahu anhu said. It's not a hadith, right? He says, a man entered heaven because of a fly, and a man entered heaven because hellfire because of a fly. دخل رجل الجنة في ذباب ودخل رجل النار في ذباب. So a person entered heaven because of a fly, and another entered heaven or hellfire because of a fly. He said, how is that? He said, two men passed by a people, right, a village or a people, and they had an idol, and no one could pass until they offer something to it. So they said to one of them, offer something, meaning to the idol. He said, I don't have anything. They said, offer even a fly. So he offered a fly. You know how they offer something, right, in service or in worship to an idol? He says, he offered a fly. So they let him go. So he entered hellfire. And they said to the other, offer. He said, I was not going to offer, I will never offer something to anyone other than Allah Azza wa Jal, right? So they killed him. So he entered heaven. So Ibn Qayyim, rahimahullah, what he wants to get from this is that, as he said, وَهَذِهِ الْكَلِمَةُ الْوَاحِدَةُ, this single statement that a person could pronounce could put him in hellfire, or it could put him in heaven. One word that you say, or one sentence that you say, could put you in heaven or could put you in hellfire. And that's in fact what the Prophet ﷺ said in a hadith, إِنَّ الرَّجُلَ لَيَتَكَلَّمُ بِالْكَلِمَةِ مِنْ رِضْوَانِ اللَّهِ مَا يُلْقِي لَهَا بَالَ تُدْخِلُهُ الْجَنَّةِ وَإِنَّ الرَّجُلَ لَيَتَكَلَّمُ بِالْكَلِمَةِ مِنْ سَخَطِ اللَّهِ مَا يُلْقِي لَهَا بَالَ تَهُوِي بِهِ سَبْعِينَ خَرِيفًا فِي النَّارِ أو كَمَا قَالْ. A person could say a word or a sentence that he does not pay much attention to it, and Allah Azza wa Jal would be happy with him because of it, and he will enter Jannah, or he will be happy with him because of it until the day that he meets him. And a person will say a statement or a word that he does not pay attention to, but that displeases Allah Azza wa Jal, and because of it he will fall 70 years into hellfire because of one thing that he says. So he wants you to understand the gravity of what we say and not really simply rely on Allah's forgiveness is so vast, it doesn't matter what I say because whatever I say is going to be forgiven. He wants you to understand that one thing that you say could doom you or it could save you. And he's bringing this incident for us to understand it. Now, why does this require understanding? Because there's something in it that is problematic, that incident, that is problematic, that we need to understand better, which is what? A person could say, how could the first person enter hellfire and it seems that he is compelled? There's compulsion, right? Because he understands that if I don't offer something to that idol, they have power over me and they can kill me. So he offers something. Why does he enter hellfire? So to answer this, we say, first of all, this is a statement from Salman al-Farisi radiallahu anhu, meaning that that's not a hadith. And some of the scholars have said this is likely to be something that Salman had learned or had heard from the people of the book, because he had spent some time with them. So that is something that he may have heard from them. So that's not necessarily a hadith from the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. So that's one. The second is, let us assume that reality matches exactly what Salman radiallahu anhu said, that yes, that person will enter hellfire and that person will enter heaven because of that thing that they did. How you reconcile the fact that compulsion negates responsibility versus that person entering hellfire because of a fly that he had offered? So you understand the dilemma? It's clear in everybody's mind? Okay. So to answer that, they said there are two possibilities. One is that the first person who would offer the fly did it eventually willingly. It's not that he was compelled. That they said offer something, the only hesitation, the only thing that stopped him is what? I don't have anything. They said, we will accept anything from you. He said, here, take it. Meaning he offered this willingly. And he was satisfied or happy with that offering. Like you would have some today who would be Muslims, but they would see nothing wrong with honoring an idol. Right? Literally, they would see nothing wrong with honoring an idol. It's part of respecting their religion. So yes, I'm a Muslim, but I will offer something to this idol. Today's world. So to that we say what? Worshipping another idol is what? Whether it's by prostration or by offering something or by nadr to it, vowing that you will do this or that, all this is haram. All that is a form of worship. If you do it willingly, knowingly, that thing can take you out of Islam. So they say that the first thing here is that this person did it willingly, without compulsion. The other explanation is that exemption by compulsion is specific to the Ummah of Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, not to other nations, which is a possibility. Meaning that in our Sharia, if someone compels you to do or to say something that displeases Allah Azza wa Jal, and you act or you do this under compulsion, you are allowed to save your life or save your family or protect your property or this or that. You are allowed. But they say that it's possible that for other nations before us, in their Sharia, they were not allowed to. Meaning, if somebody were to compel you, you're not allowed to agree. And even if you are killed, you need to be killed rather than agree with their threats. So that's another possibility. Wallahu a'lam. Right? But what we understand from that incident brought to us through by Salman radiallahu anhu is that one thing that you do and one thing that you can say will make Allah Azza wa Jal so upset with you that a person could earn hellfire because of it, or be thrown in hellfire, or deserve Allah's anger until Allah meets him, until his death. So don't belittle and look down on what you say, but rather, as we pointed out last time, continuously keep asking Allah Azza wa Jal for forgiveness, and also revisit what you've said and revisit what you did in order to investigate whether this was pleasing to Allah Azza wa Jal or not. So Ibn al-Qayyim continues and he wants now to tackle another misconception connected to what we've been talking about. He says, perhaps some of those deluded relies on the fact that Allah Azza wa Jal continues to bless him and give him from this dunya, and that Allah is not changing these blessings despite what? Despite indulging in sin. And he believes that this is due to Allah's love for him and that Allah will give him in the hereafter more than what he's giving him in the dunya. So you understand this now, this misconception is that while I'm doing all the bad things that I'm doing, guess what? Allah keeps what? Giving me more and blessing me. Like if I'm a bad person, in his head. If I'm a bad person, Allah will stop giving me these things. But Allah keeps giving me what? Favors and pleasures, and I keep getting more money and more promotions and more children and bigger houses. And that must indicate Allah's love, because otherwise, why would He give that to me? And that also indicates that I'm a favored one in front of Allah Azza wa Jal. And in the hereafter, I'll get more of this, more of the same, right? Then he said, this is delusion. He said, Allah, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said in a hadith, and this is really important, kind of to understand this, have it settle in our hearts, to help us, but help other Muslims when they ask you this question. He said, alayhi salatu wasalam, إِذَا رَأَيْتَ اللَّهَ يُعْطِي الْعَبْدَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا عَلَى مَعَصِيهِ مَا يُحِبُّ فَإِنَّمَا هُوَ اسْتِدْرَاجٌ ثم تلا قوله تعالى فلما نسوا ما ذكروا به فتحنا عليهم أبواب كل شيء حتى إذا فرحوا بما أوتوا أخذناهم بغتة فإذا هم مبلسون. He said عليه الصلاة والسلام, he says, if you witness that Allah Azza wa Jal is giving his servant from this dunya what that servant loves, despite indulging in sin, despite committing sin, understand that he is being led on. He's being enticed towards his destruction. And then he recited Allah saying, that Allah said, when they forgot what the reminders that we gave to them, we opened to them the doors of every good thing, أَبْوَابَ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ, until they rejoiced because of what we gave them. When that happened, we seized them immediately without warning, and they became hopeless. Meaning the Prophet ﷺ was bringing you evidence of how Allah dealt with people in the Qur'an, and how they, just like a lot of people, think that when Allah gives them, that this is a sign of Allah's favor. So in the Qur'an, Allah Azza wa Jal tells us in the previous ayahs to the one that the Prophet ﷺ quoted, that Allah Azza wa Jal tested these people with al-ba'sa and ad-dharra, harm in their bodies and harm in their wealth. لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَضَرَّعُونَ, perhaps that they will plead with Allah and return to Him, meaning that Allah tested them. But Allah says, فَلَوْلَا إِذْ جَاءَهُمْ بَأْسُنَا تَضَرَّعُوا وَلَكِنْ قَسَتْ قُلُوبُهُمْ, says, why is it that when we tested them with these things, why didn't they turn to Allah Azza wa Jal? It is because their hearts hardened, and they forgot about Allah's reminders. So when they reacted that way, and these types of reminders were of no use to them, that's it. Then Allah Azza wa Jal did what to them? He gave them the pleasures of this life, so that they could do more wrong. So that when Allah will take them, He will seize them immediately without warning and will destroy them. So there is no return for them. So if any person would say, how would Allah Azza wa Jal lead up? Why would Allah lead a person on? Why is that istidraj? Why would He entice them to their own destruction? We say that because Allah warned them, and then warned them, and warned them repeatedly, but they turned away from that. And when there is nothing left, and there is no good left in them, Allah Azza wa Jal leads them on. And leading them on is what? Exactly as the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam said, is that Allah gives them what they like. And when Allah gives you what you like, you think that nothing needs to be fixed with you. Nothing is wrong with you. Nothing is wrong with your nation. This works for nations as well, not only with individuals. If you find a nation angering Allah and displeasing to Him, and Allah is giving them more of His favors, you understand that what is happening to them is that they are being led to their own demise. Right? Even if they don't see it, but you should be able to see it. And if you see someone who's rich and powerful and angers Allah Azza wa Jal, but he's getting more and more of the pleasures of this life, understand that Allah Azza wa Jal is marching him towards his own destruction. That's what he said. So are you supposed then to believe that Allah, when He gives you, though you are sinful, that is a favor? No. And that is the statement of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. And قال بعض السلف, he continues, he says, إذا رأيت الله يتابع عليك نعمة وأنت نقيم على معاصيه فاحذره فإنما هو استدراج منه يستدرجك به. Saying exactly what the hadith has said. He said, if you see that Allah successively is adding ni'mas to you while you are disobeying Him in a state of habitual sin and disobeying Him, he says, beware of Him. Beware of Allah Azza wa Jal at that moment, because Allah is leading you on and He's enticing you towards your own destruction. So a person will always be fearful that when he receives a ni'mah from Allah Azza wa Jal, while at the same time being a person of sin. You say, why is this happening to me while I'm disobeying Allah? And the opposite should be true. That is, if Allah wanted the best for you, He would take things from you to wake you up. But if He gives you more so that you would sleep more, then you understand that maybe there is something wrong. And that itself, that ni'mah, becomes a terrifying occurrence. Why is it this is happening while I do not deserve it? So that should wake you up. It should alarm you more than a catastrophe, more than being deprived of things. And Allah Azza wa Jal, He continues, He says, Allah Azza wa Jal says, وَلَوْلَا أَن يَكُونَ النَّاسُ أُمَّةً وَاحِدَةً لجعلنا لمن يكفر بالرحمن لبيوتهم سقفا من فضة ومعارج عليها يظهرون. He says, Allah Azza wa Jal says, and if not, that if we were to do the following, everybody would become disbelievers, we would do the following, which is what? We would give to those who disbelieve in Ar-Rahman ceilings and stairs of silver, right? And their doors would have, and their homes would have doors of silver. And their couches, their furniture will be made of silver. And also adornment of gold. And then Allah says, and all of this is the brief enjoyment of this life, and the hereafter belongs to the pious. And this is an ayah that's valuable to remember. وَلَوْلَا أَن يَكُونَ النَّاسُ أُمَّةً وَاحِدًا. I mean, the only thing that has stopped Allah Azza wa Jal from doing the following is that it becomes so much of a fitna that everybody would be a disbeliever. Otherwise, Allah Azza wa Jal would give the disbelievers what? So much wealth that their ceilings will be made of silver, and their stairs will be made of silver, and their furniture will be... You understand how rich they would be. It's Allah said, if not for that, this would be such a tremendous fitna, I would give them so much of the dunya that they will be so wealthy, and the believers would have none of that. But how many of the believers would be able to withstand this? To see nations disbelieving in Allah Azza wa Jal, right, swimming in gold and silver, and they have none of it. Or the believers seeing that sinful people swimming in gold and silver, and they have none of it. He says, who will be able to tolerate that fitna? He says, if not for that, Allah would give so much of the dunya to them. You know why? Because it doesn't matter to Allah Azza wa Jal. And because more of it is tempting and destructive, and less of it wakes you up for the hereafter. Because the akhirah belongs to you if you are obedient to Allah Azza wa Jal. So a believing man and woman should have that faith solid in their heart, that it doesn't matter how much the non-believers have of the dunya, and even it doesn't matter how much they have of power in the dunya, because all of the dunya is gonna evaporate. If you are strong enough, you will see this with your own eyes, or if not with your own eyes, with your own basira, the eyes of your heart, you'll see it. It's happening. None of this power matters, none of this gold and silver matters. If you wait, Allah Azza wa Jalla will take it all away and will give it to the believers in the hereafter. So it doesn't tempt you. Someone is richer than me, it doesn't tempt you, it doesn't shake you. Someone is more powerful than me. Then that disbelieving the kuffar are more powerful than the Muslims. It doesn't shake you, because you understand that that is nothing in the eyes of Allah Azza wa Jal. True power is with Him, and true power is in the hereafter. And He can give it to whomever He wants, but it doesn't shake you. So you should be a person of a solid, strong faith that if I believe, that is sufficient for me. And Allah will give me the best of the akhirah, and maybe also in the dunya. But don't be tempted by the discrepancy of power or discrepancy of riches. That's what Allah Azza wa Jal is saying. And then he continues and he says that Allah Azza wa Jal himself refutes that understanding that more of the dunya is favors from Allah and less of the dunya is humiliation or anger from Allah. Because Allah said, فَأَمَّا الْإِنسَانُ إِذَا مَبْتَلَاهُ رَبُّهُ فَأَكْرَمَهُ وَنَعَمَهُ فَيَقُولُ رَبِّي أَكْرَمًا. As for human beings, when Allah tests them and he gives them favors of the dunya, then they return and say, my Lord, my Rabb has honored me. More money, more riches, more children, or I'm being honored. That's what people believe. The disbelievers, yes, and even some Muslims. That's what they believe. وَأَمَّا إِذَا مَبْتَلَاهُ. But when Allah tests them, and he limits their provision, limits what he gives them of the dunya, they will say, my Rabb has humiliated me. Allah is angry with me. Then Allah says, kalla, no. Meaning that's not the case. That's the wrong way of thinking about Allah's gifts and Allah's tests. So Ibn al-Qayyim says, meaning, not every ni'mah and not every expansion of provision when I give to you is a sign of honor. And not everyone that I test and I limit their provision, I have humiliated or I'm angry with him. But I test this person with the ni'mah and I honor this person with affliction. I test, see what he chose here. He says, I test this person with worldly favors and I honor this person with worldly affliction. That's the proper way of understanding it. Meaning when you're being afflicted and you're losing the dunya, you are being what? Honored. That's what he's saying. When you're losing the dunya and you're patient, you are being honored. Don't turn and look at it and say, these people are losing. Allah is angry with me. I'm less than so and so. When you're tested with the dunya by going away from you, losing it, you're being honored. And the person who enjoys the favors of this dunya, he's being tested. Allah knows what's the conclusion of that test is. But typically, when Allah gives people more power, they become more rebellious. Gives them more money, more rebellious. Seldom few among humans survive that test. So Allah Azza wa Jal wants you to correct that understanding, right? Why does Allah keep testing me? He's angry with me. You know how many times people ask that question? Why is it that I'm trying to get married, I can't? I'm trying to have children and I can't? I'm trying to have a job and I can't? I'm trying to do this and I can't? Allah must be angry with me. On the one hand, we say, yes, yes. Correct yourself in relation to Allah Azza wa Jal so you're always better. Consider all of these things that are happening as messages from Allah Azza wa Jal that you need to be a better person. So pray on time. Give zakah. Stay away from the haram. Give sadaqah. Make a lot of dua. Yes, use it as an opportunity to be herded back to Allah Azza wa Jal, because all of these things are reminders, by the way. But it doesn't mean that if Allah did not give you this and this and this from the dunya and he gave it to the other person, that Allah loves them and hates you. Where do you bring that from? So this is a correction that we need to understand. And just like as we said from the beginning of this book, it's not enough for us to understand it. It's also needed that you understand it deep enough that you communicate it. Because someone may come and ask you these questions. And now you have ayahs, and now you have hadiths, and now you have a spot, a reference in a book, and statements by scholars who are saying you this. So you mark that, and you highlight it. Or if need, transfer that into a booklet of yours, so that whenever someone asks that question, write the question down. You have the answer, 1, 2, 3, 4, because they will need it from you, right? And he said, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُعْطِي الدُّنْيَا مَنْ يُحِبُّ وَمَنْ لَا يُحِبُّ وَلَا يُعْطِي الْإِيمَانَ إِلَّا مَنْ يُحِبُّ. Allah Azza wa Jal gives the dunya to those whom he loves and those whom he does not love. But he only gives iman to those whom he loves. Okay? He only gives iman to the ones that he loves. So the dunya will come to you. Whether he likes you or not, he'll give it. But iman, he'll only give it to you if he loves you. So you want to understand if Allah loves you, understand how much of iman he had given you. You want to understand how much Allah Azza wa Jalla loves you, ask yourself, how much do you love Allah? Do you want to understand your position, your status with Allah Azza wa Jalla? Understand the status of Allah in your life. That's how it is. That's how it works. So Allah gives the dunya to everybody, but iman only to the ones that he loves. So if you want to be among those whom Allah loves, what do? Get iman. Get more of it. Then you know, bi-idhnillah Azza wa Jal, you have a strong evidence that Allah Azza wa Jal loves you because you're pursuing iman. This is your concern. That's what you want. And he said, rahimahullah, he says, some of the salaf have said, how many people are being led on by the ni'mas of Allah Azza wa Jal and they do not know? How many people are being led on by Allah's ni'mas? They think they're fine, they're great, but they do not know. And how many are deluded because their sins are concealed and they do not know? And how many people are infatuated or deluded by people's praise and they do not know? So what he's saying here is that people are unaware because of these things that are happening to them. Meaning he's being led on with Allah's ni'mah, like we talked about. And he doesn't know that he's being led on. He is completely blind to it. And that is a blindness that person had chosen. Allah is not unjust. He woke you up. You don't want to wake up. Then Allah gives you of the ni'mas of the dunya. Because that's what you want. And you're not going to pay attention to anything else. So if you consider all of these ni'mas with all of the sins that you're committing and you're not aware, then you're blind. And that's what he's saying. The other blindness is someone who's being concealed. His sins are being concealed and he's saying that he's fine as long as the sins are being concealed. And you don't know when one of those times Allah is going to expose you. But you're living a delusion. I'm fine. Nobody knows about them. I'm fine. It's okay. They have no consequences until you're found out, until Allah breaks that seal. And the worst embarrassment is in the akhirah, not in the dunya. It's in the akhirah, when everybody will know about it. But imagine that if Allah keeps protecting you, and you think that somehow this is going to continue to happen, one of those times, that protection will end. And that's the delusion, thinking that somehow you're assured protection. Why? And the third one, people praise you and you believe it. MashaAllah, you're this, MashaAllah, you're that. And you know from yourself that there are hidden problems, but you believe their praise. He says you're being tempted and deluded by it. No, you know yourself better than those who are praising you. And understand that when people praise, they tend to what? Exaggerate or be right on the mark? Exaggerate. Like when we love, right? We exaggerate our love and we exaggerate our hate. Our reactions are always exaggerations. So when somebody likes you or somebody praises you, they're most likely than not had exaggerated your praise, exaggerated your position and status. Told you the things that you like to hear, not the things that you don't like to hear. So you can't accept what they say about you and forget about what you know about yourself. So moderate any praise that you receive with the reality of your life, which you have the best access to. And أَعْلَمُ مِن نَفْسِي مَا لَا يَعْلَمُونَ مِنِّي. I know about myself what they don't know about me. So dismiss that praise and focus on working on yourself. And then he said, rahimahullah, he says, and the most deluded are the ones who are deluded by the dunya and its immediate promises, immediate pleasures. So because of that, they favor it over the akhirah. And they're happy with it instead of the next life. And he says, to the extent that some of them will say, الدنيا نقد والآخرة نسيئة والنقد أنفع من النسيئة. He says, some of them will go to the extent of saying that dunya is cash and the akhirah is credit. Delayed payment, right? Delayed gratification. So that's credit. And cash is better than credit. Right? So he's describing here a segment of the population who are in the bosom of the dunya. Right? Who love it so much that when you come to them and say the akhirah and the hereafter, they'll tell you, come on, that dunya is right here and now. I get to drink this and eat that and enjoy all of this. And the akhirah is a delayed promise. And they say cash is better. Cash is king. I enjoy it now. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know what is going to happen when I die. I don't know. So let me enjoy the here and now. He's talking about that element who are so enamored with the dunya that they don't want to think about anything else, even if they carry Muslim names. So he's saying some of them will say, what? The pleasures of this life are certain, and the pleasures of the akhirah are doubtful, and I will not leave something certain for something doubtful. Right? Now, of course, right, a person who speaks like this is verging on disbelief, if not already a disbeliever. If you say that, the pleasures of the akhirah are doubtful, meaning if you're doubting the hereafter, what remains of your Islam? Right? Nothing remains of your Islam, but he'll discuss it and see how he discusses it. He says, first of all, he says animals, that's what they're saying, he says animals are smarter than you. Because what animals do is they know that this something is harmful, they avoid it. And these guys, they know something is harmful, but they do it despite that. They know it's harmful and they do it despite this. And he says, they are مَبَيْنَ مُصَدِّقٍ وَمُكَذِّبٍ. They're between a person who believes in the promises of Allah, believes in revelation, and someone who denies it completely. So he says, this type of people, he says, if you believe in Allah, in the Messenger, and in the last day, yet you sin and engage in all of that sin, you will face the greatest regret on the day of judgment because you did all of this while knowing that it's wrong. Right? Like people who smoke or drink alcohol. Let's think about the dunya only. Somebody comes to you at the beginning of that sin and they say, you know what that is going to do to you? And you say, I know. It will kill. Right? It's surprising. I don't know how people smoke. Have you seen? I see them on the floor. You know how the packages that have... You see them like being thrown around and you see the images on them? Somebody half alive, right? How do you bypass that when you smoke? How do you bypass that image that this image, that thing is going to happen to you? That you're killing yourself. So in the beginning, right, you say, you know what it's going to do to you? Yeah, I know, cancer of this, cancer of that. And you keep smoking. Or a person also who drinks alcohol, you know what it's going to do to your liver, it's going to do to your brain, it's going to do to your digestive system. You understand what it's going to do to you? Yeah, I know. And then, so if you smoke this, you drink that, and you know, once it happens to you, you will face the greatest regret because you knew. You can't claim ignorance. You knew. So it's saying, think about the day of judgment when you cannot go back and change any of this. Somebody tells you, now you got cancer because of smoking or drinking alcohol. Cancer, that's it. And you understand, I did that to myself. That's the regret. How do you reverse this? After years and years of killing yourselves. So Allah told you not to. Why do you do it? Right? So he's saying, if you know, then that is a problem. And it says, if you do not know, then may you be cast away. Further away to you, right? Maybe be thrown away because you chose not to believe, right? And he said, cash is better than credit. He wants to answer this. He says, okay. Cash will be better than credit if they're equal. But if the credit, what you're being promised, is better than what is immediate, which one is better? He says, credit is better. So he says, if what we're talking about is, okay, dunya and the akhirah, and the dunya, all of it is not worth one breath in the akhirah. How can you say that cash is better than credit and the dunya is better than the akhirah? Because when you compare them, there is no possible comparison between the two. I mean, if we compare all of the dunya to the akhirah, the dunya is like one breath that you will take in the akhirah. That's it. He says, okay, but your life in it is a fraction of the entire life of the akhirah, of the dunya. The dunya is what? Millions of years? Right? All of that is like one breath in the akhirah. But your life in the dunya is 60, 70, 80 years. What is that in comparison to the dunya? And what is that in comparison to the akhirah? That is nothing. How then can you say that the dunya could be better than the akhirah? And he said here that the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam said, مَا الدُّنْيَا فِي الْآخِرَةِ إِلَّا كَمَا يُدْخِلُ أَحَدُكُمْ إِصْبَعَهُ فِي الْيَمِّ فَلْيَنْظُرْ بِمَا يَرْجِعُ. He says the dunya in comparison to the akhirah is like if you take your finger and you dip it in the sea and you come back, how much liquid does it carry? Because that is a visual, physical example. So you want to understand what it is, go to a river, go to the sea, dip your finger and see how much you're able to bring back. What is this compared to that large body of water? It is nothing. It says that's the dunya to the akhirah. Like a dip like this. It says how could you then sell the akhirah for the sake of the dunya? So he's saying this small insignificant thing that it will end. That is the thing that you want to favor instead of something that will last forever. And it is so precious that it's beyond imagination and its joy is beyond anything that anybody experienced. That thing you want to give up for something that is so small and insignificant. And that's how you want to live your life. That's the wager that you're making. That this is better than the next. And then he said, either you are in doubt about Allah's promise, or you believe it, you have certainty of it. He says, if you are certain of Allah's promises, you sold, right, the pearl of the hereafter, right, for the sand of the dunya, meaning something very precious for something that is very cheap. If you believe in Allah's promise, but you do this, you've sacrificed the most precious thing for the most and the cheapest of things. But he said, if you are in doubt, and this is where it gets interesting because he offers this as a solution. He says, if you are in doubt, قَالَ فَرَاجِعْ آيَاتِ اللَّهِ رَيَاتَ الرَّبِّ تَعَالَى الدَّلَّ عَلَى وُجُودِهِ Okay? وَقُدْرَتِهِ وَمَشِيئَتِهِ وَوَحْدَانِيَتِهِ He says, if you are in doubt, then go back and read and contemplate the ayahs of Allah Azza wa Jal that point to His existence and His power and His will and His oneness and the veracity, the honesty of what the messengers have said about Him. وَتَجَرَّدْ and free yourself of bias. Free yourself of preconceptions, meaning be objective. وَقُمْ لِلَّهِ نَاظِرًا وَمُنَاظِرًا And he says, and endeavor, be diligent, do it for Allah's sake. Okay, nadhiran, okay, with contemplation, or munadhira, or in discussion. Meaning, look at all the evidence that Allah has in the Quran, if you're in doubt. Okay, anybody who's in doubt. Look at all the evidence that Allah presents in the Quran about who He is, and about His power, and about His promises. Read it. And look at all the cosmic universal signs that Allah had made to point to all of this as well, to His power and to His oneness. Look at all of that. And then, tajarrad, be objective. Meaning now, let go of all your bias. Let go of all the things that you were taught. Let go of all of your preconceptions. And be as objective as you can. Meaning, I'll do this based on the evidence that I see, not because of my parents, not because of my culture, not because of what my habit, not because of what I like. You be as objective as you can. This is what we ask everybody else to be. When you look at Islam, you be objective. Not what your parents taught you, not what your culture taught you, not what the media taught you, but what you see based on the evidence in front of you, right? That's what we say. You and the evidence, and the evidence in you. That's what he says. Tajarrad. Let go of all the other attachments that you have. And it's you and the truth. And it's you and Allah Azza wa Jal. وَقُمْ لِلَّهِ. Stand up for Allah Azza wa Jal. Meaning what? You be serious about this. Do it for Allah's sake. Nadhira. Look and contemplate and understand on your own. Seeking Allah's help. أو مناظرة. Or engage in discussions with people. Seeking the truth, but also based on freedom from bias and experience. No, do it for Allah Azza wa Jal. حَتَّى يَتَبَيَّنَ لَكَ. Until it becomes clear to you that what the messengers had brought from Allah is the truth that there is no doubt about. And that the creator of this world and the heavens and the earth cannot be anything else other than what the messengers of Allah said about him. Meaning if the messengers of Allah, all of them said, he is just, he must be just. How do you know? Yeah, the messengers said, but he says, look at all the ayahs, and that will point in the same direction. Allah can only speak the truth, all these ayahs point to that. Allah can only be wise and powerful, Allah can only be merciful and forgiving, all the ayahs of Allah will point to what the messengers of Allah, alayhim as-salatu wasalam, ajma'een had talked about. It cannot be that what the messengers have said can contradict the ayahs of Allah Azza wa Jal. Your contemplation will lead you to iman, but you need to be free of bias, and you look at that evidence in its place and do it for Allah's sake. And if you seek Allah's assistance, Allah will guide you. Right? That's what he's saying. قال ومن نسبه إلى غير ذلك فقد شتمه وكذبه وأنكر ربوبيته وملكه. He says, if you attribute Allah to anything else other than what the messengers of Allah said about him, then you are defiling the divine. You are attacking the divine, attributing to Allah Azza wa Jal that he is a liar. You are insulting him and you're denying his power, his rububiyyah and his kingship. Because it's impossible, and he's using here rational proofs. Is it impossible here for anyone who has the sound fitrah, meaning to be of sound mind and sound heart, not corrupt, sound mind and sound heart. It's impossible that the sovereign king, Allah Azza wa Jal, that he would be unable, meaning weak or ignorant, or does not know, or does not hear, or does not see, or does not speak, or does not command, or does not prohibit, or does not punish, or does not reward, or does not elevate or downgrade people, and that he does not send his messengers to the outreaches of his kingdom, and does not take care of his subjects, but rather he lets them be idle and actually ignores them. He says, this would blemish an earthly monarch if they do this, and would not befit them. How is this possible that you could attribute this to Allah Azza wa Jal? So you see what he's saying here, because this is a powerful evidence. So imagine here that you have a king, and that king has a kingdom. And that king, you suppose now, he's wise and he's merciful and he's kind and he's caring. Would you not assume that he takes care of all of his subjects? Otherwise, how is he kind and merciful and wise in all of this? What is stopping him? If he has the power and he has the mercy and he has the ability, then he will take care of everyone. Okay. Now, is it conceivable that this king would feed the subjects and give them water and give them clothing, but does not give them laws to organize their lives? Does not tell them how to live? Does not tell them that this is wrong and this is right? Because if he doesn't tell them, who else will tell them? No one. He's the power. If he doesn't tell them, no one else will tell them. So that will be what? Chaotic. They will make up their own laws. They will kill each other because this person will say, that's mine. And this person, no, it's mine. And I have power. And there's no one to organize them. There's no one to offer discipline. It says, then would you imagine that king being a wise, merciful, powerful king regulates their life physically, meaning they eat and they drink, but he doesn't give them laws, doesn't tell them how to live? Obviously not. You're with me? What he's trying to say? He says, if he regulates it this way, he has also to regulate it that way. Otherwise, you can't look at that monarch and say he is a fitting monarch. Any government today that does not offer laws is not a government. It's a failure. It doesn't organize the life of its people. It's not only responsible for their eating and drinking, it also has to regulate their lives, protect them from harm, tell them what's right and what's wrong. If it fails to do this, it's a failure. It's not a government. And if we go back to the area of a king, that's a failure monarch. It says, so how then can you imagine that Allah, who is the King of Kings, gives people food and drink, but he doesn't tell them how to live. And he does not proclaim his will to his population, to the subjects. How does he proclaim his will? By sending messengers who carry books, who go all the way to the ends of the earth, reporting what Allah Azza wa Jalla wants. That's the message of Allah. So if you believe that Allah is all of the things that we talked about, then he must have sent messengers, and he must have told the population how to live. Otherwise, that would be a blemish on that monarch. So this is what he's saying. And he's saying, وَإِذَا تَأَمَّ الْإِنسَانُ حَالَهُ And he says, if a person observes his own life, his own condition, from the time that he was a sperm, and the time that Allah had given him perfection, in human perfection, in his body. I mean, you grow from almost nothing, and then stronger, and you keep gaining strength and thing until you reach adulthood, perfection, human perfection. He understands that the one who took care of him until he had reached that stage and was taking care of him in every stage of those stages, in your mother's womb, who was taking care of you? No matter what your mother tries to do, no one, the one who is actually taking care of you is Allah Azza wa Jal. And when you're born in that state, who keeps moving you from one state to the other, from one state of weakness into strength and even more strength? And you graduate in strength until you become the strongest that you can. He says, the one who had positioned him in these stages cannot ignore him or leave him idle, leave him heedless, but rather he must command him and forbid him and tell him what are his rights on him so that he could punish him and reward him. Meaning, why did Allah Azza wa Jal move you from that stage of weakness into a stage of strength and give you all of these limbs and give you the ability to hear? Isn't it for something? And Allah Azza wa Jal is moving you towards something, right? What is this thing then? If he doesn't let you know, then that is a deficient God. Now, if you see a maker, right, of anything, and he is sitting here, right, and that comparison, of course, that is not a complete comparison, but rather, it still works. If you see someone who is a maker of watches, a maker of chairs, a carpenter, whatever, and he's sitting there hour after hour, day after day, creating something, and is taking care to fashion it and perfect it, and you see that it's moving from one stage into a better stage, into a better stage, into a final stage of perfection. You understand that he spent all of this time to create this thing for a reason. What if he created it for no reason at all? What would you call him? Foolish, stupid person. What are you spending all of this time on? To do what with it? To destroy it? Just to leave it at rust? There has to be, if you are wise, you're creating and spending all this time because you're getting this ready for something special. If it has no purpose, you would not create it. صح? No wise person will do this, even if just for people to look at, because you want them to admire it, but it must have a purpose. So he is telling you, Allah Azza wa Jal had fashioned you this way and given you all of these things, and you graduated you in power and in knowledge and given you these limbs and ability to hear and reason and understand. And all of this is for what? Then what? It must be that there is a responsibility. There must be that there's an end to it. What is this end? What does he want you to do on earth? If he doesn't tell you, if he doesn't guide you, then he had wronged you. But if he tells you, if he guided you to what you eat, if he guided you to what you should drink, if he guided you to how to procreate, what you should wear, if he guided you to that, then religious guidance, moral guidance, ethical guidance is much more important. Right? You think about it. Which one is more important? Ethical moral guidance or how to plant seeds so that you could grow them and eat them? Because if he doesn't tell you the borders of right from wrong, we will kill each other. This is what we're doing. We're killing each other. But when he tells you, then he protects you. And he tells you also, there is a reason for your existence. So that's what he's saying here, rahimahullah. And he's using here rational proof. Works for anybody who's in doubt, right? And he says, and if the servant of Allah were to contemplate, true contemplation, then everything that he sees and everything that he does not see would be evidence for the oneness of Allah, for Tawheed and prophethood and the last day and the Quran being the word of Allah Azza wa Jal. And he said, we talked about this, he said, when we, in another book called Imanul Quran, when we mentioned Allah's saying, I swear by what you see and what you do not see, it is the saying of a noble messenger. فَلَا أُقْسِمُوا بِمَا تُبْصِرُونَ وَمَا لَا تُبْصِرُونَ إِنَّهُ لَقُولُ رَسُولٍ كَرِيمٍ. وَذَكَرْنَا طَرَفًا, we talked a little bit about this, he said, when we said, وَفِي أَنفُسِكُمْ أَفَلَا تُبْصِرُونَ, and in yourselves, do you not see? And that the human being in himself is an evidence that his creator is there, is present. And that he is evidence that Allah is one, and the messengers are right, and that Allah Azza wa Jal deserves all attributes of perfection. So what he's saying here is that, when Allah says, I swear by all that you see, and all that you do not see, that is the most comprehensive oath in the Quran. Because that includes everything. Everything you see and everything that you do not see. Allah is saying, I swear by all of that, this is the saying of a noble messenger. Meaning, it has come from Allah Azza wa Jal. A messenger brings from somebody else. That comes from Allah Azza wa Jal. So it's saying that everything that you see, if you really understand it, will point to Allah. And even the things that you do not see, that are not present to you, he says, well, how will that be evidence when I do not see them? Because what you see is evidence of what you do not see. Either Allah told you about it, so you believe in it, or what you see points to it, right? You see its effects. Or if it's completely hidden from you, what you see tells you it must exist. You don't see angels, but Allah told you about them. And if you believe Allah, they become evidence of Allah's existence. Okay? You see a lot of things that we call power, physical power on this earth. You don't see gravity, but you see an effect. So whatever you see or you do not see, you look at it, it says everything will lead to the same conclusion, which is that Allah is one, the prophets have spoken the truth, there is a day of judgment, and the Quran is the word of Allah Azza wa Jal. And then he says, وَفِي أَنفُسِكُمْ, meaning you want also a sign, you don't have to go far. In yourself, there's a sign in you. The more that you look at yourself, the more that you'll understand that there's a creator behind you. The least of it, of these observations, is that you didn't create yourself. And you need a maker. And you need a sustainer. Because who sustains you? Because you know that it's not you who sustain you. The only thing that you do is you take a bite and you eat. Once it leaves that, it's out of your control. Who processes all of this? Somebody else, right? Someone else. You know, it's highly regulated. How is it that someone highly regulates everything that enters your body? When this is going to be digested, how it's digested, how it gets distributed, it's a very complex system. And if somebody were to suggest that such a complex system, okay, exists without the intervention of anyone, in worldly matters, you would laugh at them. A computer system, very, very sophisticated, but no one is behind it. A traffic system, very complicated, but it just happened that way, you know what? We just rolled the dice and it happened that these things came into place. These intersections, the traffic lights, how they're coordinated, roll of dice. We rolled it so many times, one of them had to work, right? No one believes this. You understand, there's intelligence that must produce intelligence. It says even in yourself, there's evidence in you, there is a higher power than you. Tomorrow, I'm going to go and eat and drink that. Tomorrow you're sick, you can't do it. Tomorrow I'm going to invest in this. You change your mind. There's something more powerful than you that stops you at times. So you understand your own weakness and limitations, and somebody is higher. See, so that's what he is saying, rahimahullah, in yourself, without even looking at anything else, you have evidence that Allah Azza wa Jalla exists. So he says, it's clear then that this person who is sinful is being deluded. Then he asks a very important question, you know, rahimahullah. Then he said, how is it then that a person could be certain of what's going to happen and yet at the same time not do anything about it? يعني تخلف العمل. He says, how is it that a person could be certain that the hereafter is going to come and at the same time not do much about it? And is it possible in human nature that a person would know that tomorrow he's going to be summoned to a king, and that king can either punish him the most severest of punishment, or he will honor him the best of honor, and he spends the night careless about that appointment. Doesn't care about it, right? It doesn't pay much attention to it. It's as if it's not going to happen. And does not remember or worry about that tomorrow when he will be standing in front of that king, and does not get ready for it, and is not anxious about it. Is that possible even in human nature that this would happen? He said, this is by Allah Azza wa Jalla is a sound question that most of creation need to answer. And the harmony of these two things, the agreement or the presence of these two things together, is a wondrous thing. Meaning you believe with certainty it's going to happen, but you don't do anything about it. He says, it's impossible to imagine that these things coincide and they happen at the same place and they still are held together. And he said, it happens that a person does not behave in accordance to his belief because of several reasons. One is the weakness of knowledge and yaqeen, meaning you have knowledge, you have yaqeen, you have some certainty, but it's weak. Weak type of knowledge. And he says, one who thinks that knowledge doesn't vary and move from the very strong to the very weak, he does not understand people, right? He said, Ibrahim al-Khalil alayhi salam, Ibrahim, Rasulullah Ibrahim alayhi salam, he asked Allah Azza wa Jalla to show him how the dead come back to life with his own eyes so that his knowledge could graduate and could increase, moving from a level of knowledge into a higher level of knowledge. And he said that the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام said, لَيْسَ الْمُخْبَرُ كَالْمُعَايِنِ. The one who's told about something is not like someone who sees it. Right? So Ibrahim عليه السلام, he wanted what? I heard about how Allah Azza wa Jalla brings people and animals to life after their death, but I want to see it. So why do you want to see it? Because that is a higher level of knowledge, unlike if you just hear about this. And he said that the Prophet ﷺ had said, لَيْسَ الْمُخْبَرُ كَالْمُعَايِنِ. The one who sees is unlike the one who just simply hears about a thing. And that is a very simple, but yet very profound statement from Rasulullah ﷺ. And the evidence of that is when Allah Azza wa Jal told Musa ﷺ, your people after you have started worshipping a cow. He had the tablets in his hand. He didn't react. When he saw them, he threw the tablets and broke them. طيب, why Musa alayhi salam did this? And he already was told about it. لَيْسَ الْخَبَرُ كَالْمُعَايَنَةِ. Hearing about something is not like seeing it. Right? You're told they're worshipping cows and said, okay, fine. But you think that gets you ready for it. But when he sees them, actually, people that he knew, worshipping a cow like that, and they're dancing and singing around it, oh, he couldn't control himself. So subhanAllah, that is true about tests and afflictions. Hearing about it is not like living the thing. Right? Any adversity in life, hearing about it, right? Right? What's going with the people in Gaza, right? You see it. You hear about it, it's not like living it. Totally different, right? And we don't understand the consequences of it until you live that thing. So, لَيْسَ الْخَبَرُ كَالْمُعَايَنَةِ. So Allah Azza wa Jal can graduate a person into greater knowledge by seeing these things with his own eyes, experiencing these things with their own eyes. So a lot of what you read in the Quran, by the way, is khabar. Allah promises this, Allah will punish for this, Allah, you know, comes to the aid of his slaves and servants, right? It's all khabar, 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 khabar. News, 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 news. We haven't experienced it. Not until you experience it will you really understand it. And then that ayah will be as if it was revealed just right now for you. No, now I understand what it means that Allah comes to the aid of those who call on him. Now I see it. Because now it touches your heart. It's not something you've just memorized. It touches your heart. So that's why you go, and I and you, we go through some trouble at time, for you to know the things that you know on a deeper level. So it's saying there's a difference in knowledge, and some people's knowledge and yaqeen is so weak that their action doesn't follow. خَالَ فَإِذَا اجْتَمَعَ إِلَى ضَعْفِ الْعِلْمِ. Okay? It says, if we add to the weakness of knowledge, if we add to it that it's not present in the mind and it's absent from the heart, because the heart most of the time is being preoccupied with the opposite of that knowledge and opposite of what Allah wants you to remember, and you add to it human nature and the overwhelming desire and the overpowering of lust and the self making this desirable or easy for you, and the delusion of the shaitan, and you're thinking that the promise of Allah is yet to come and will need a lot of time for it to come. Istibta'ul wa'di, it's a prolonged promise that is not going to come soon, and you have extended hope, and you are sleeping in heedlessness, and you love the dunya, and you experience or you allow yourself to accept wrong misinterpretation of the Sharia, and you have bad habits. He says, if you have all of this together, one after the other, here the only one who holds Iman in its place is the one who holds the heavens and the earth from falling apart. He's what he wants to say is that, you know how many things are working against you? Yeah? That's what he named. He says, the only thing, if all of these things, you have your habit, you have the shaitan, you have yourself, you have lack of knowledge, you have heedlessness, you have, and he named all of that, go back to it. All of that is working against you. And how do you keep your iman with all of this? If not for Allah who keeps the heavens and the earth in place, your iman doesn't stay in place. Which tells you that you need Allah Azza wa Jal to keep your iman in place. Otherwise, it will collapse just like as-samawat wal-ard. Allah holds them. Who holds your iman? Allah Azza wa Jal. But it also means that he had a lot of things working against you. And you need to push back. You need to push back. Now, so let me stop here, inshallah. I'll just briefly want to answer a question that we've answered last week, but it didn't get, I don't think it got recorded. So let me just stress again, because this is the time when it comes up, which is the issue of Al-Mahdi again. Okay, in light of everything that is happening, right? Are we waiting for Al-Mahdi today, tomorrow? Anybody's waiting for him? No. So if you hear, oh, Al-Mahdi is about to arrive, videos about Al-Mahdi, Al-Mahdi is there, all of these things, it's so typical, right? That in times of unpredictability and turmoil, that a discussion or a mention of Al-Mahdi should come up. And what we have to understand, first of all, first and foremost, we do not think of Al-Mahdi as a savior. No. It's not like we are in so much trouble. Yeah, Al-Mahdi, come and save us. No one person can do this. Right? No one person can do this. So you're attributing to him something that is far beyond what the Sunnah talked about. He's a leader. Not a person who will come and magically just kind of take care of everything. So he's not a savior. That's one. Second, right? We understand that Al-Mahdi has certain qualities. Not anybody who claims that Al-Mahdi is Al-Mahdi. So what are some of these qualities? As we mentioned last week, we said that his name is Muhammad. His father's name is Abdullah. He's from the line of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, from the children of Al-Hasan radiyallahu anhu wa an akhihi Al-Husayn. He is from the line of Al-Hasan. Okay? And Allah Azza wa Jalla, we didn't mention this last time, He fixes him in at night. Whatever that will mean, whether he was not a such a good person, then Allah fixes him, or He fixes him to become a leader. Whatever it is, but Allah fixes him in a night. Right? And he's a khalifa. And as some of the Salaf have said, don't follow every claim of Al-Mahdi, or even a person who claims that he is Al-Mahdi, until you see the Ummah united behind him. Until you see sufficient evidence that this person is Al-Mahdi. Until you see the scholars of the Ummah uniting behind him. Then you follow. But any average person, any nobody coming to you or online and saying that I am Al-Mahdi, disbelieve in them until enough evidence is presented, not to you, but through the Ummah, to the Ummah, so that the Ummah will follow him. And only then you do. But any calls for Al-Mahdi at this point should be disregarded. Any video about him should be disregarded, unless you know that the person who's talking about him is basing what he's saying upon the Quran and the Sunnah. But oh, Al-Mahdi, we are waiting for you, or Al-Mahdi is on the doors, or Al-Mahdi is already here. This is talking without evidence, speaking without evidence, right? So you just dismiss that, and you'll find out that after all this is all is said and done, people will go back to their normal lives, and the issue of Al-Mahdi will just die until the next time that it's going to come up again, right? So, inshallah, let me see if you have questions based on what we said today or said in the previous weeks, inshallah, let me know. Yeah, fadal. Of course. All that we talked about, so the question is there any authentic hadiths about Al-Mahdi? Yes, there are some authentic hadiths, some sahih and hasan hadith about Al-Mahdi. And the scholars of Islam have collected them, they commented on them. Not every single hadith about Al-Mahdi is authentic. There are fabricated hadiths, there are weak hadith, but there is sufficient authentic, sound hadith about Al-Mahdi to establish that he is a figure that will be there at the close to the end of times. And he will be at the time of Isa alayhi salam. He will meet Isa alayhi salam when Isa descends. Barakallahu fik. Ah, tawaddal.
Mm-hmm. So every lie or anything that you believe comes from something that you heard. And what you see is the reality. So the distance between them is only these five fingers.
No. Now, Jazakallah khair. So the question is about praise. When you receive this praise, how can you protect yourself from its harm? And how do you distinguish between real, genuine praise and flattery? Somebody who's just lying to you to get something from you. So how do you protect yourself from its harm is by realizing the extremes that people go to in their praise and their criticism. Because you definitely are not going to accept people's criticism of you, all of it, because you realize that they'll go to extremes in it. And people, when they hate you, they go to extremes in criticizing you. So they don't uphold justice. They'll find anything that could be interpreted as a fault and attack you for it. So you understand that's an extreme. So you're not ready to accept all the bad things that they say about you when you realize that it's an exaggeration. The same thing, if they love you, realize that they will move in the opposite direction, but it's still an exaggeration, that they will say things about you that move beyond justice. You're the best of this, or you're the greatest of that, and you realize that that is not true. So you have to pull yourself from both those two extremes into the middle and realize that you're not their praise, all of it, and you're not their criticism, all of it. You're somewhere in the middle. And that you know yourself much better than an outsider. So you say, no, I know my flaws much better than they do. They know a superficial me. There's a superficial us and there's the real us. They know the superficial me. The real me is different. And one of the dua of Abu Bakr radiyallahu anhu is that Allah Azza wa Jal, don't hold me responsible for what they say about me. Forgive me what they don't know about me, and make me better than what they think about me. So that is a very beautiful dua that encapsulates your position, meaning, Ya Allah, forgive me what they don't know about me. So there's a distance, right? Like the distance you talked about between what they say and what I am. And don't hold me responsible for what they say about me, and make me, and this is the beautiful thing, better than what they say about me. So that I am lower, but make me better. So this is how you can protect yourself from it. And the difference between flattery and genuine praise can easily be detected, bi-idhnillah azza wa jal, if a person goes back and examines himself. And you'll understand that this person is crossing over the limit, and this person seems genuine, right? And if not, you know, we ask Allah, you know, for that. Allahu a'lam. Okay, we can do that. I can do that. I can repeat it next week, inshallah. But I'll remember, inshallah, that from you. So I'll repeat it next week, inshallah.
What is called the statement of Sahab according to Sharia? Afar
Naam, repeat that again.
That statement of the Sahab, like what he said, Salman
Fari. It's
Afar, right?
Naam.
So
it's
some people, I saw they practice Afar like
Hadith. Barakallah Fik. Barakallah Fik. Jazakallah Khair. So he's saying that the statement of Salman, radiallahu anhu, right, that's an Athar. So he's saying that, is this like a Hadith or is it not like a Hadith? And this is a really good question because it comes back to Mustalah al-Hadith, the ilm al-Mustalah al-Hadith. So the scholars have said what? He said, if that statement from that Sahabi is not known to be something that that person could say from his own, based on his own opinion, right? And he's not known to have taken from the people of the book, so these two conditions, then that statement of his is a hadith. But if the person is either known to have taken from the people of the book, or this could be his own statement, it's possible, then it could be just his own or from the people of the book. So for instance, an example. Let's say, for instance, Sahabi X. And he says that in heaven there will be this and this. And in hellfire there will be this and that. He says this. And it's authentic to him. And he does not read to anything from the people of the book. We say, how could he have known this? Because a Sahabi is very pious. You wouldn't just say these things. How would he know this? It must be what? The Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam, he had learned it from him. And that's why he said it. But if that Sahabi, a different Sahabi, and he says something about the Day of Judgment, and he has a history of reading the books of the people of the book, now here you have the possibility. It could come from here or it could be a hadith. Then you have to investigate this. Or a Sahabi says something, and it could be just a personal reflection of a personal experience. So it's not something supernatural. So you could say, this is just his own. I have no evidence yet that it's a hadith. So it's complex in the sense of, upon your investigation, you'll be able to tell whether this could be treated as a hadith or simply a statement of the Sahabi or a statement of a Sahabi that had simply adopted from the people of the book. That's what it is. Barakallahu feekum. I think stop now. Khair, inshallah. Tayyib, inshallah. So in barakallahu feekum, inshallah, we'll see you next week at the same time. Subhanakallahu bihamdik. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Walhamdulillah, rabbil alamin.